Welcome to the Literary Escape Podcast, the only podcast that serves both readers and authors of historical Christian romance. We read, discuss, review, and rate books in this unique romance subgenre, and sprinkle in a few contemporary Christian suspense books. Authors, we bring you inside tips and tricks from those who have gone before you. Then we bring both readers and authors together for fun-filled live Q&As. Literary Escape is the one-stop shop for both readers and authors to connect, learn, and grow together. Let's dive into this adventurous episode. Welcome back, everyone, to another Literary Escape podcast. And today we are excited to have Tracy Peterson here with us. So welcome, Tracy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We have just finished reading your, I believe it's the Heart of Cheyenne series, or is it the Hope of Cheyenne?
The Hope is, yes, I think it's the Hope.
It's the Hope. I get the two mixed up, so I apologize.
No problem.
We absolutely loved it, by the way. Just wanted to let you know
that.
Thank you. And a lot of the other book club members couldn't make it today to talk with you, but they did send in some questions, so we'll get to those here.
Wonderful.
Pretty soon, but we would love to know maybe like when you discovered the historical Christian romance genre and when you decided you'd like to write in that genre.
You know, that was really exciting for me because at my age, there wasn't really much of a Christian fiction line. And so there were, you know, some Grace Livingston Hill books, and Catherine Marshall wrote Christie, of course, and a couple of others that fit that genre. But until Jeanette Oak comes along then and starts with her series and her books, we didn't see a whole lot of it. And once I started reading, I realized that was what I wanted to read, but also what I wanted to write. I have wanted to write since I was young and loved storytelling. That was my deal, because it was just so much fun to be able to, you know, create and come up with characters and places and whatnot. And I loved history, so it just all fell into place that it should fit. But, you know, there wasn't a lot of places that you could look to. And so when Bethany House then released the Taney books, the Zion Chronicle and the Zion Covenant, Michael Phillips, Judith Pella, you know, it was just such a great thing as far as I was concerned, because these were the kind of books not only did I want to read, but I wanted to write.
That's wonderful. Can I ask, and you don't have to share, like what age were you at when your first book got published then?
I was right about 30. You know, I'm 67. I don't make any bones about it. And, you know, it was 1992. I had been trying so hard to find a publisher for what I wanted to write. And again, there just wasn't a lot of it being done. But I happened upon what was a 2-in-1 flip book or something like that from Barber Publishing. And I thought, here's some more of what I want to write and read. And so I contacted them and I said, look, I have a manuscript ready. I want to write historical Christian fiction, particularly romance, adventure, action, you know, that kind of thing. Americana Westerns, that was my real love. And so they wrote back and they said, well, I asked for guidelines and I got those, and a couple of weeks passed by and I get a phone call. And this isn't the way it usually happens, but the editor there said, hey, you know, I was reading through your letter to the company, and would you consider writing contemporary romance, Christian? And this is what's so funny. I said, well, no, I'm not really interested in writing that kind. And so he spent like the next 20, 30 minutes talking me into sending him something, which to this day makes me just laugh because I can't believe I said no. And so I sent him something, but I reminded them again. I said, I've got a full manuscript ready to go. It's historical. Here's the word count. Here's the setting, you know. And so then he calls me back and he says, go ahead and send that to me. You know, I want to see it. And so he did, and then gives me another call and says, we're going to contract on it. We love it. And, you know, we're going to hold on to the contemporary proposal you sent because we like that too. And that's how it all got started then. And so had Barber not come out then, they were going, this was the prelude to their Heartsong Presents line of books. So had they not done that, I don't know where God would have taken it.
That's interesting. You know what? Every time I kind of ask that question of authors of like, how did they get into, you know, their author career, everyone's is a little bit different.
It is. You know? It is.
So that's neat. So what does a typical writing day look like for you then?
For me, typically I get up and I check emails. A lot of times there's stuff from the publisher that needs to be addressed. I hold off on, I've got a different site then for the fan mail and emails and whatnot. And I'll check that usually in the afternoon after I've written. But what I do is I go over the things that I've written the day before. And I always try to give myself a plan of writing a chapter a day. I'm a plotter, so I detail out a big, long synopsis, chapter by chapter. And I joke about it, you know, with Seat of the Pantsers, but I think we're doing the same thing. I'm just writing a very abbreviated version of the book when I sit down and write my synopsis, and they're writing it in a more detailed fashion. But, you know, excuse me, having that synopsis has saved my bacon more than once. And so, you know, a lot of times there's been, you know, those situations where, you know, someone has died or I've gotten sick or had an injury or something like that. Having the synopsis, it just keeps me on track. Keeps me going forward. And so also because I write that detailed synopsis, and I usually send it to the publisher ahead of time. And so we can address any problems that they see with the pacing or with the character development or anything like that with the storyline. And I have very few rewrites. So for me, that's worth coming up with that detailed synopsis.
Yeah. And I've heard that before too, from people that outline there, it does reduce it on the editing side.
Yes.
And the revision side, reduce that work. So that's awesome. Well, I would love to dive into this series a little bit with you. We just felt like you addressed some pretty deep and honest, tough topics throughout this series. Like I know you had like suicide, you know, your life built around revenge and how do you deal with finally giving forgiveness, walking away from God. You had one main character that had done that.
Sure.
And then depending on money instead of God, you had another character that wrestled with that. And we just really, really admired the way you biblically addressed each of those topics, because we all struggle with those at some point or another, or we know loved ones that struggle or walk through that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we were just curious, what was your inspiration? Like, what drew you to kind of weave those topics in?
Well, I think that the biggest thing that I was going through when I first set up the characters for the first book in The Hope of Cheyenne, the A Constant Love, Charlotte and Micah, I had experienced a family member having committed suicide. And it was a very difficult situation. And we were all just heartbroken over it. People that I was around had also, there were some that had experienced it in their families. And we were talking about it one day. And the big question was, you know, do people who kill themselves go to heaven? And so, you know, that question alone made the topic worth addressing to in my mind, you know. And so as I really started doing Bible studies on it and really digging into the scriptures and whatnot, I just kept coming back to Romans 8, 38 and 39. Nothing can separate us from the love of God, height nor depth, you know, no other creatures, demons, nothing separates us from the love of God that's in Christ Jesus. And so I was really blessed by that. And I thought, I think this story needs to be told for the sake of those people who are asking questions like this. And so as I continued to dig and read scripture, I talked also to Christian counselors and, you know, pastors and things like that to get their opinions too. And it was just a relevant topic, I think, even more so for this day and age, because we see so many young people in just horrific, overwhelming situations that they are taking their lives, or they're self-medicating and accidentally losing their life to overdoses and things like that. So it was a topic that was very close to home. And I wanted to look at that and really examine it. And as for some of the other things with the serving money or with focusing on revenge and things like that, I think all of us have little areas of our life, whether they're as grandiose as the story topics and whatnot. There are little places where we do find ourselves, you know, thinking, well, I wish I could get revenge for this. I wish this person would pay for what they did. And that whole attitude sort of undermines our Christian walk in the senses that we are looking to other things or people or our own actions to resolve our issues. And we need to be taking it back to God.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. I have to tell you, so I recently lost a dear friend and colleague to suicide. So when I picked your first book up and started reading it, I actually had to stop because it was just probably just a little, I'm just a little too close to that event.
Yes.
And I really struggled, but I'm going to try not to tear up when I say this. I love the way you addressed it because it just kind of gave me hope because you do wrestle with that afterwards. So
absolutely.
So thank you.
And in the historical setting, it was really overwhelming. The church was very negative towards suicide and a lot of times wouldn't even allow that person to be buried in the churchyard or in the church cemetery. And so you had situations where people could be very ugly about suicide. And so, as in my story, the people involved decided to hide it. And it becomes this secret to be hidden away so that no one can make a big deal out of it. And so this secret then becomes one of, you know, more complications than it had to be and causes trouble then for the hero. But I think that overall, my desire is to point people back to Jesus. And so throughout this series and any of my books, I always try to make sure that we share the gospel message, but also just give regular, everyday ups and down problems kind of thing and biblical application for how to deal with those things.
Well, I will say you did an excellent job. And for anyone listening, if you just need a boost of hope, read this series. It's excellent. Excellent. And I will also say one of the things we absolutely loved is the way you opened every book with this incredible hook, I guess you could say, or event that just you don't see it coming. So we were just curious how you came up with these kickoff events.
You know, I always credit God with all of it because I do believe he's the one that gives me stories. You know, authors are always told, make it worse. You know, we think about the things that are going on in people's everyday lives and whatnot. And how can I cause that to be even more difficult than it would be normally, because obviously everyday life can be rather boring. But for instance, with the second book in the Hope of Cheyenne series, Designed with Love, I wanted to have a situation where I have a character, and this is Emma Johnson, and she's a good time girl. She wants to have fun. Her whole life has been boring and she just wants to have fun. And so she meets a guy, young man, who also just wants to have a good time. And they decide they'll marry because they can't just run around all over the world like they want to and not be married. That's just not acceptable, even though they don't care. And so the book opens with their wedding. But it's not a regular wedding. There is, you know, a young woman coming forward who is in just absolute agony and misery because she's in a bad way and she's come to make her point and she ends up shooting up the wedding. And so I won't give away the details, but, you know, as far as a hook, I thought, well, how else? I mean, you know, what better thing to do here than to start it out with this horrific ordeal and then work through. And so as in often, you know, the things that sometimes happen, these horrific deals point us to Christ. But then as we further get away from it, then we're back to the situation of, well, how does this fit into regular life? And as things calm down, where do I take this and how does this work? You know, but with that story, I also had the desire to put in a character who was upbeat and positive and yet had struggles of her own. Mm-hmm. And so we have Rosie, the character of the hero's sister, and she has some mental delays because of having been born with the cord wrapped around her neck and she didn't breathe. So she tells people she's just no filters with Rosie. She just speaks it as it is. And she often tells people her story. She says, I was born dead. And so, you know, this character was really precious to me because she was actually based on somebody that is very close to me and in my family. And I kept thinking, okay, there is a wisdom in this person so often, even without her filters, you know, that speaks to my heart. And she says a lot of things that I sometimes just stand in awe of. And I know they're from the Lord. And so I wanted to have that kind of a character in Rosie. But yeah, you know, just making it worse, making it harder for the for the characters. And, you know, like you said, if you can't open with something, you know, that's going to hook the attention and really grab the reader, then, you know, you've got a problem. And so I always try to make sure that I can do that with something. And so then with the third book in the series, A Moment to Love, I have a situation of a young man seeing his father shot and killed while he's trying to act on behalf of the Pinkertons. And so this young boy sees this happen and he grows up to want revenge. And he wants to take that in hand and get his father, you know, his father's murderer. And at the same time, then we come full circle. This series, The Hope of Cheyenne, was the second series. The first was The Heart, like you mentioned earlier, The Heart of Cheyenne. And The Heart of Cheyenne started out with a character who was 2 years old, and her name was Carrie. And Carrie is the heroine then in the last book of The Hope of Cheyenne. And so A Moment to Love, we have Dr. Carrie. And she is very interested in not only medicine at a time when women weren't really encouraged to do things like that, but she's interested in the brain. And she's fascinated from a real life case of a man named Phineas Gage who had a tamp bar go up through his head and out. And he lived. He was conscious the whole time. And talk to people on the way to the hospital and all these things. And she's fascinated by this and the brain. And so she wants to get into what we now would say would be the neuroscience and, you know, study of the brain. But that was just in its infancy. So not only is she against the odds with being a woman doctor, but she definitely is against it with the whole study of the brain. And so we start her story out with her fiance stealing her work. He's also a doctor and they're working together and he steals her work and publishes information under his own name. And so she's betrayed and dealing with that. And it sends her back home to Cheyenne, to, you know, her family. And so it made for a great conclusion to just come full circle, starting with this little two-year-old and ending with her as a young woman fighting for the things that she wants and believes. And of course, throughout it all is the romances for everybody and spiritual growth. And it was just a lot of fun to do. Cheyenne is a fascinating place. And after doing a lot of research, I knew that I wanted to tell stories about their history. And of course, barely touched it.
But you have a lot in there, and we really enjoyed picking out those nuggets of historical facts that you weaved in. You did a really good job. Thank I was you. Also going to circle back to Rosie. Mm-hmm. I love her because I think she just shows that childlike faith that we're supposed yes. to have, you know, and she just does it, you know. Like you said, she just pops things out and says it like it is. And
no filters.
Yeah. Yeah, we really enjoyed her. What do you hope then that readers will take away when they read this series?
As with any of my books, my heart's desire is that people will draw closer to the Lord and that perhaps characters who are having similar problems to theirs, they would be able to see biblical application for those things. They would maybe think through the issues, you know, like with suicide. I've had a lot of reader letters and people talking about you know, this helped me to better understand. And that's really, I think, all any writer can ask for, is that that their books would cause people to think, and that they would give them, you know, a certain amount of satisfaction and comfort. And so throughout it, I just want to bring people back to the Lord, to see the comfort that he offers, to know the power that he has to make bad things right, you know, smooth out those rough places. And especially when it's a situation of you know, feeling there's no. And that's the thing, you know, so many times I paint my characters into corners where they have no hope, and that hope can only come through the Lord. And so that is my heart's desire. I want each of the books to present the gospel message and then give biblical application.
Well, you do a great job at that.
Thank you.
Definitely. I am curious, though, as you've written several books now, but do you have a favorite romance trope that you like to write?
You know, I can't say it's necessarily my very favorite or whatever, but I do like the second chance thing. I like where you have a couple who knew each other as younger people, and they come back together later after, you know, certain things separated or divided them, whether it was family troubles or negative attitudes about, you know, the direction the hero wanted to go with his career or lack thereof or whatever. I like to bring them back together because they have a history, and there's so many things you can do with a romance and a story where the people have a history. And so that's one of my favorites.
Yeah. I always feel like you can go a little bit deeper and a little bit faster with them too. So
faster for sure.
Yeah. All right. We're going to do some fun kind of rapid fire questions here. If you're not sure, you can just skip.
Well, we'll see.
Do you like to drink coffee or tea while writing?
Both.
Okay.
I do. I like both. And it just depends on the day.
Okay. And are you a morning writer or a night owl writer?
Usually a morning writer, unless something comes up. I've always been really flexible, though. So, yeah.
What's always on your desk while you write?
My Bible.
I can totally see that.
You know, yeah.
If your main characters could visit you for dinner, what would you serve and what would you talk about?
Mercy. I guess we'd have pot roast. I like pot roast. Easy to throw in the crock pot. Yeah. And we would probably talk about their historical time period and what they think of the times, because that's something I really love from my books. I like to read diary accounts and get a feel for the time period and what people were actually thinking.
Neat. And I don't know if you draw inspiration from songs or not, but if you do, what might be a soundtrack for this series? A few songs you might connect to it. Do you do anything
like that? I don't do anything like that. No, not usually.
Okay. And not everybody does. So have you ever thought about if you could cast actors to play your main characters, who you might choose?
I've not really gone that direction either. I mean, you know, I do usually have a picture of somebody, you know, that I think might fit my character, but they're not always people that anybody would recognize, like movie stars or anything. Might just be somebody I saw in a catalog or, you know, just happened upon. So I can't even point to it and say, oh yeah, this is a, you know, a definite so-and-so, you know, character.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I have a hard time even knowing actors' names most of the time.
The other thing is, I've heard over and over from writers or readers that they like it better when the details aren't so given for each character, because they like to imagine their own person for that character. Yeah. So, you know, I will paint a picture to a point and let them take it from there.
That makes sense. All right. Can you give us any hints about what you're working on now?
Absolutely. First of all, in March, a new series is coming out that is set in Minneapolis, and that series is Minnesota Legacy. And book one is Faithful of Heart, and that will come out in March. And this is a generational series, so we'll have mother, or we'll have daughter, mother, grandmother in reverse order. They're a family who are really compelled by their compassion and love for people, especially those in need. And so they are people who are heavily involved in charities to help the underprivileged and the unwed and the orphans and widows and that kind of thing. So that series is coming out for the 2026 year. Right now, what I'm working on writing and researching is a series that's going to be set in Roslyn, Washington, and it's a coal mining community. And so there will be a coal mine in the backdrop. There'll be stories focused on it. Then there'll be some stories that aren't. But it's really been interesting to research because, you know, you don't generally think coal mines in Washington State, but they had a huge one, and there's still a large, large deposit of coal in that area. And it made for a lot of fun as I started digging in and researching. So that's what I'm working on.
Wow. Okay. I'm trying to remember when this episode will come out, but I'm thinking it's going to come out pretty close to when your book releases then in March, which that's exciting. That's exciting. We'll have to get our hands on that. Where can readers connect with you then?
They can connect with me at my website, which is just TracyPeterson.com. They can connect with me at Facebook, and that's, you know, Facebook.com/author Tracy Peterson or Tracy Peterson author, either way. And then on Instagram, and I'm not sure what that address is, but I'm sure if you type in author Tracy Peterson, it'll pop up.
Yes, I'm sure. Is there anything else that you would like to share that we just haven't touched on today?
Oh, goodness. Not that I can think of. As I said before, writing for me is a ministry, and that is something that compels me. You talked about the number of books. I just turned in book 150, and, you know, throughout it all, readers are always sending me notes and emails saying that they're impressed that the books aren't just repeats of each other. But I totally credit God with that. When I started this, I wanted it to be a ministry to reach out to folks who might not otherwise pick up a Bible or care about reading Bible studies or Christian living books and that kind of thing. I have found over the years that's exactly what God has done with these books. And so it's been such a blessing. And I want them to continue to point people back to Jesus.
Well, I will just say, I think you're doing an excellent job, and we truly appreciate your writing.
Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate that.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please consider sharing our podcast. Every share helps us reach more readers and authors like you. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.